on Inside Black and Gold. Question we had here that kind of goes back to last segment. Let me find it. Justin Pasquale says, would you rather have Leggett or Coleman in the second round if the Saints went that path? Both seem to like they have ability to replace Mike Thomas. You know, Xavier Leggett was a guy I took at 45 in our second mock draft. And if he had been there, I might have taken him again in our most recent one. Obviously, I don't think he was. I think he went a pick or two earlier than that. So, I mean, just in terms of I've gotten a much closer look at Xavier Leggett to kind of understand what I'm looking at. That's probably who I would err toward. You know, Keon Coleman, I think the Saints have gotten a really good look at him. Obviously, they had him in for a visit. I don't think he'll be there. I think Leggett has a guy that might fall down from where his peak draft stock would be. Whereas I think Coleman's going to see that stock rise. And in part because, you know, when you're on that prolific of an offense, it helps you out. You know, South Carolina, for better or worse, was not a very good team. And it's not going to show Xavier well. That said, I don't think you could go wrong with either of those guys. Xavier has that that sweet South Carolina accent that I love. But you know, I'd probably go with Leggett just because I think the size is more legit. Like Keon's a bigger guy, but you put him next to a lot of wide receivers and you'd be okay, that's a wide receiver. Xavier, you know, he's built like a truck. And that's kind of what I need. And because that's always, you know, what Mike Thomas was best at, was just being more physical than anybody else. And we'll see. But either way, I don't hate either of those picks. If they went with either of those guys at 45, and you can make a significant argument that they do need to add wide receiver talent at 45, I'd be okay with it. But I would land on Leggett. Scout Without Cloud says, one question from what you've seen slash heard of Saldivari. Can he win the starting left guard spot? Can he? Yes. Will he? I think that's a big ask. And it's just because you didn't see him on the field at all last year. And it's not his fault. You know, James Hurst was healthy all season, right? So you didn't really need to get that deep in the weeds at the guard spot the way you had to at tackle. I think you need to see him compete for that job in camp. We talked about this in a previous episode. And I do think that this team is, you know, they're not down on Nick, right? They drafted him kind of knowing that they were going to have him focus on guard. You know, he played tackle in college and he played multiple offensive line spots, but he was primarily a tackle in college. And they knew that they were going to have to take a little time and focus him on guard and have him pick up the skills that he maybe was able to bypass in college because he was at Old Dominion and the talent level he was blocking was not as high. So I think it's just a question, and that's what this team is going to look at, is how far along is he? Does he pick up the skills that they need him to pick up? Can he polish the areas that he struggled in? If he can do that, then yes, because I don't think James Hurst is a particularly impressive starting left guard. I think he's probably below replacement level at left guard. And the reason he's on the team is versatility and the fact that he's a good locker room guy. So you could beat that guy out. you know, James Hurst is a guy who was a backup most of his career. He probably should still be a backup now, a high quality backup, but a backup nonetheless. So, you know, I think they're going to give him a chance. I think Nick's going to have a chance to compete. Even if he doesn't win that job out of camp, I think he ends up being kind of your first in line backup, the way Landon Young has kind of developed into that first in line backup. And then if you do have an injury at guard, then yes, I think he could take over that job and probably own it. But I think that's the process that you'll go with, is you'll start with the veteran. And then if the younger player takes over and plays better, then you stick with him. But for now, I think it's just you got to see what he has in camp and go from there. Mitchell Milano says, Penning can develop. I have no idea why we are acting as if his career has been decided. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. Now, there's good reason to be skeptical of a guy who was not able to get on the field in year two. If the Saints had not fired Doug Marrone, I would say I would be much more heavily in the, okay, you got to just find another option because this ain't it. The fact that they fired the offensive line coach tells you a lot about how they felt that room was being handled, and particularly the development of young players, in my opinion. So I do think that they're hopeful that John Benton gets in there and this new staff gets in there and they're able to wring a much more productive season out of Trevor Penning. I think you're going to let him play through his struggles this year more so than last year, assuming he wins that job out of camp. And you're hopeful that, you know, like, and this is not just to say this, he was dealing with a torn Lisfranc tendon last year, Lisfranc whatever, and had to have surgery. So he lost that entire offseason. That, you know, you talk about a leap from year one to year two. That comes through playing, but it also comes from having a full NFL offseason that's not interrupted by pro days, that's not interrupted by a draft, that's not interrupted by moving your entire life from Iowa to New Orleans. You know, you just get to focus on football for the first time and focus on getting better and fixing issues. And, you know, the players that improve are the ones that do that, right? The players that show up in year two and look a lot better are the ones that spend a lot of time in the offseason working on the things that they were unable to work on prior to their rookie season. Trevor couldn't do that. And he got into camp and he just looked like the same guy because he was the same guy. I think that's what this team is. That's the glass half full take on Trevor Penning is he has all offseason with a healthy foot. And hopefully he can get some private coaching. He can get to where he needs to be and keep Derek Carr alive this season in a way that he was unable to last year over the first several games. You know, you talk about 11 sacks through two and a half games. That's what Derek had. And they finished with, I think, 34 sacks allowed on the season. So you can kind of do the math there and say you allowed 11 through your first, 10 and a half quarters. And then you allowed 24 through your final however many games, 14 games. So it's clear that taking him out did help things along. I don't know. That's going to be the biggest issue I have is if he can't get it done, you can't force it. But we'll see. Either way, I agree in the sense that a lot of people have already heaped dirt on Trevor Penning as if this guy going into his third year just has no chance whatsoever of becoming a quality NFL player. And I just don't think that's necessarily true. Justin Pasquale says, also, we've got to go get Theo Johnson in the mid round. Love his tape and what he can bring. You know, Theo's funny. And the tight end class is really funny this year. You know, Mike Dettillier talked about this recently. You know, last year was probably, if not the best, one of the top five tight end classes of all time in terms of the depth, right? You're talking about guys, you know, Sam Laporta, was the first guy off the board, I believe. And he was, you know, but then you had Luke Musgrave, Tyler Croft, Dalton Kincaid, you know, Darnell Washington slipped. He was the last of that group to get picked. And even he, I think it was a third rounder. There was just so much talent at the tight end position. This year, it's Brock Bowers, it's Jatavion Sims, from Texas. People know who I'm talking about. He's probably the only other day two pick. And then you're talking about a lot of day three guys. You know, maybe a team falls in love with Theo Johnson's traits and takes him in the third round. But I think more likely you're just going to see several fourth, fifth, sixth round tight ends. And Theo's in that group. And the reason I find Theo interesting is, you know, a team's going to fall in love with what he's able to do physically and probably overdraft him. Probably, you know, if he was projected to go in the fifth round, he'd go in the fourth round because there's so many things there to like that kind of fly in the face of the fact that there's really no tape to get excited about. The stats aren't there to get excited about. But, you know, he's big, he's athletic, he can block, he can go out and catch passes, he needs to work on his route running. But for a fifth, sixth round tight end, I think that's value. So I agree. If they don't go Brock early on, I think you could see them target a guy like a Theo Johnson. There's several other tight ends that they could look at. Even like a Johnny Wilson from Florida State. You know, they did love turning Juwan Johnson into a tight end. Maybe they look at Johnny Wilson and he's 6'6", whatever, 230, and they take him with the idea of converting him to a tight end. So he's another guy you could look at. All right, going back to J.C. Latham, I asked Scout Without Clout why he would prefer J.C. Latham, and he says, he's so big with elite balance, has monster man-mauling reps in the run game, that's good alliteration, with mobility that exceeds what should be possible at his size. Evan Neal bust might make Latham fall too, fingers crossed. And there was somebody else that pointed out, you know, I go on this long rant about how Alabama just bullies people at the offensive line on the offensive line, but that really wasn't the case last year. And there's a good argument to be made that that roster was falling off, and maybe that's why Nick Saban decided to retire. He's going to blame NIL, but you know that roster was not the loaded with talent roster we have grown accustomed to seeing, at least not at the level of winning championships each and every year. So. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm overreacting to kind of my feelings about Alabama always just bullying people. But I felt the same way about Clemson when they were winning all those titles. It's really just tough to gauge a team when there's that much talent. It's like, for example, the quarterback. Like, you look at Bryce Young, right? You're like, okay, how good is the quarterback when he's throwing to, you know, first-round wide receivers every week, right? And he has this top-end offensive line. C.J. Stroud, I think, one of the reasons you look at him and say, hey, why wasn't he a higher level prospect? Why didn't people like him as much? And I think that's part of it too, is because every year Ohio State has the top wide receiver. So is it the quarterback? Is it the wide receiver? You know, I do think it's really interesting that there's three top 10 wide receivers in this draft. There's several first round wide receivers, but you're talking about Rome Odunze. Michael Penix was a Heisman candidate. Is it Rome Odunze who's the star, or is it Michael Penix, or is it a combination? Malik Nabers, Jaden Daniels won the Heisman Trophy. Is Malik Nabers really that good, or is Jaden Daniels really that good, or is it the combination? Marvin Harrison and, you know, whoever else. But the point is, you know, it can be that simple as they're both really good. You look at Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow. I'm curious to see what Ja'Marr Chase's career might have been like if he didn't land with Joe Burrow, but he did, and they hit the ground running. So I don't know. I think as you kind of go through this, you do have to kind of weigh teams against individual talent. That said, you know, I think you're right. I mean, J.C. Latham, I don't think you would go wrong with any of these offensive line prospects. It's just a matter of picking the right one. It's kind of like the wide receiver draft in 2022, where it was like Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, Drake London. You couldn't go wrong with any of them. They've all been really good. And it's just a matter of, okay, who do you have rated the highest? And you go get them. And the Saints, I would argue, came away with the top one, even though they did not pick the top one. I think Garrett Wilson and Drake London both came off before Chris Olave was picked. So it'll go from there. But all right, let's move on. Mitchell Milano says, also, we keep looking at this just as a position thing. Look at it beyond that. DA said he wants to play physical offense. That is not Fashanu's game. No, and I think, again, I think that you're overreacting to the kind of plug and play aspect that you can get out of Olu that maybe you wouldn't get out of some other guys. But I do, you know, this draft more than any, you know, every year we go into this and we evaluate and we say, well, this is what the Saints have done previously and this is what they've targeted. And until we see a couple drafts with the Clint Kubiak system in play, it's going to be tough to know how that changes, right? What do you prioritize differently than you did in the past? And, you know, do you prioritize, you know, athletic tight ends, right? Is that something that you look at this offense as Clint Kubiak and you say, I think we need a higher pedigree tight end to grease the skids on a lot of these concepts? And if that's the case, then maybe you do go for a Brock Bowers, or, you know, you want a more mauling offensive line. And so you wouldn't look at Fashanu for that. So I do think there's a good point to be made there. And DA did kind of surreptitiously kind of throw in, hey, you know, all these pass catchers, you know, there's only one way to interpret that, and it's that he's including wide tight ends in that, because there's, you know, you could say receiving running backs, but I think if you're not saying wide receivers and you're saying pass catchers, it means you're talking about the tight end position. H-Town Creole. Saints should get the best player available because the team is in rebuild denial. Will Campbell and Jones are leaving LSU next season. Rebuild denial. That's a good one. I haven't heard that before. Rebuild denial. What stage of grief is rebuild denial? Is that the third or fourth stage? But yeah, I mean, I land on this differently every time I think about it. And like, what is a rebuild? And what are you looking for in a rebuild for you not to deny it? Right? Like, what are the Saints doing that says we're not trying to get younger? And I don't know. I kind of feel like they are. I kind of feel like that is what they're showing you by not getting aggressive in free agency, letting David Onyemata walk last year, right? Drafting a first round defensive tackle and signing a couple younger defensive tackles in Colin Saunders, Nathan Shepard, right? You're talking about a team that everyone's like, hey, what if, why are they thinking about trading Marshawn Lattimore? I mean, that's, to me, that's a soft rebuild. And, you know, I think when you talk about rebuild denial, it's not about just a static rebuild of like, hey, we're not good enough here. We're probably not a title contender right now, so we don't want to act like one. And we want to be a little bit more judicious about how we dole out free agency dollars, you know, how we spend our assets in the draft, you know, how we evaluate younger players versus veterans who, you know, maybe you have to play to learn versus have a little higher floor at this point, but they could reach their ceiling with playing time. And I do think the Saints are there. The issue is, I don't think there's a lot of people who probably wouldn't accept that as a rebuild, because their definition of rebuild is tear everything down to the studs and literally just start fresh with rookies and second year players and third year players. And see, I don't like that. I don't want to see the team do that. So I'm never going to say, hey, they should, because I just don't think that's, you know, I've watched teams do that. I've watched teams be bad. I've watched teams be bad, not, you want to say intentionally, but they've set up situations where they're probably going to be bad and they succeed at being bad. And I don't know, as a fan of a team, you don't want to be watching your team do that, right? Like, we talk about getting the fan base excited. No one's getting excited for this team to lose 15 games. You know, maybe you go get a quarterback. Maybe you don't. Maybe you draft Bryce Young. Maybe you get a quarterback that is a bust because this team has never shown the ability to go draft a quarterback. Like, so I don't know. I think you could go about it in a variety of ways, but I mean, Will Campbell and Jones, if there's one thing I know about the Saints, it is that I should never get too excited about LSU players in the draft. Even now that they're willing to take some LSU players with Foster Moreau, Tyrann Mathieu, I still don't think they're going to draft guys just because they're close by. Scout without clout. We get one or two more in here. Says, if we simply draft offensive tackle well this year, defensive end well next year, and QB year after, we could be back in contention. I think it's too early to say whether our rebuild is going well or poorly yet. Yeah, right. I agree with that. I do think they are trying to soft rebuild. Now, the success at which you do it is another question. But I agree. I think this is a year where playoffs would be a victory. And I think you can get to the playoffs if things break your way in a way they haven't in the past. And if Derek Carr is more comfortable, and if you can build out the offensive line in front of him in a way that is helpful. But I do think they are in a rebuild. You know, it's kind of like when you're looking at the economy and you're like, are we in a recession? I'm poor, but is everyone else poor? Are we technically in a recession, or is it just like, you know, everyone's gas prices are really high and I have to buy Wonder Bread instead of the other bread? I don't know. That's kind of what it is with a rebuild. Like, I wish there was like a governing entity that could be like, rebuild, so that we could all just stop debating about whether it's happening or not. So here's one we can close on, because I disagree with it. Roderick Dewey says, you can't truly rebuild with an aging quarterback. And I don't know, I kind of feel like the opposite. I feel like you can't really rebuild unless you have an aging quarterback, because otherwise you're just screwing over a kid, right? Like, it's really difficult to rebuild around a rookie quarterback. Like, look at what the Panthers are doing. The Panthers, like, the Texans got really lucky with how they were able to pull their situation off. But one of the reasons it worked as well as it did is that rebuild started 2 years before they drafted their rookie quarterback, right? So they had pieces in place. And Davis Mills was the sacrificial lamb, or whoever else was there was the sacrificial lamb. By the time C.J. Stroud stood behind that offensive line, it was a really good offensive line. By the time he was throwing to his receivers, you had quality receivers there for him to throw to. You know, they had a not a great defense, but a good defense. Obviously, they had the rookie head coach. And the only way you get there is by going with a veteran quarterback. So I would argue that you are actually in a very good space to rebuild now if you continue to do that. Whereas if you go draft Jaden Daniels, the Commanders, say the Commanders draft Jaden Daniels, that team's not ready to win. So you are committing your franchise quarterback to 1, 2, 3 seasons of just relentless misery. And that's tough to build around. And by the time you build up your roster again, have you stunted your quarterback's growth? And he's never going to be a guy that can get you more than 7-8 wins. And at that point, you're stuck in the middle. So I don't know. I think you're talking about Derek Carr, and you're saying if they were trying to rebuild, they wouldn't have Derek Carr right now. And I disagree with that. I think you very much can rebuild with Derek Carr, but you have to be willing to draft a quarterback behind him and develop a quarterback behind him. And that's what I'm not sure the Saints are willing to do at this point. Maybe they are. If they go and take Michael Penix in the second round, maybe that's their signal to you. If they don't, then it becomes tougher. And you're looking at Jay Kaner and being like, yeah, maybe. I don't think so. But I think it's an interesting question. Roderick says, it works for Peyton Manning. Okay, yeah, sure. It works for Peyton Manning. But I don't think that you're going to get very far if you base all of your NFL takes around, like, oh, if you just take Peyton Manning, you'll be fine. I think the Saints would be happy if they could find a way to draft Peyton Manning. Then it'd be good. But no, and you're right in the sense that Peyton really struggled in his rookie year. You know, he had one of the worst rookie years of any quarterback you'll find, or at least any quarterback that ended up starting for 10 plus years. But he is the exception, not the rule. And one more. The only way you keep an aging QB is only if you start invest in a new one. Like, we're on the same page here. Right. So if you're someone who really wants the Saints to rebuild, the answer is not cut Derek Carr and commit to losing. The answer is bring in a quarterback that ideally could start in 2 years, right? Look at, you go the... for example, like, look at the teams that have been successful at replacing veteran quarterbacks with young quarterbacks. What have they done? Draft Pat Mahomes and let him sit behind Alex Smith for a couple years. Those Chiefs teams made the playoffs. They weren't good enough to win in the playoffs, but they made the playoffs. Those were good teams. So you rebuilt around Alex Smith and allowed Pat Mahomes to get better. And when Pat Mahomes showed up, he obviously was already ready to win. And then, you know, obviously if everyone could draft Pat Mahomes, it'd be great. Jordan Love, another example. Aaron Rodgers, another example. When you can do that, you have a much better chance to execute a rebuild. So we'll see. But I think we'll end with Justin Pasquale. If the Saints nail this draft, how many wins do you see them getting this year? So it's a good question. By nailed it, you know, I'd probably use the 2017 draft as kind of the standard bearer for a team nailing a draft. And so with that, you would say, you know, at least 2 starters and then a third player who is making a big impact behind a starter. So in that case, it would have been in the 2017, you actually got 3 starters and then that other guy, because you got Marshawn Lattimore, Ryan Ramczyk, Alvin Kamara, and Marcus Williams. So, you know, if the Saints were able to pull 3 starters out of this draft, which would be nearly impossible because, you know, they only have 2 picks in the top 4, in the top 150. Let's say 2 starters. Let's say they get 2 starters and kind of that depth guy, which, you know, 14, 45, and then you trade up to 3 and you get a guy and you hit on him. In that case, you draft a right tackle and he comes in and he plays right away. Trevor Penning develops and is a quality left tackle. At 45, you take, say Keon Coleman, and he comes in, he catches 40 passes, 5 touchdowns, and he has a really solid impact as a rookie on defense. You know, Brian Brzee takes a step forward. You trade Marshawn Lattimore and you put Alante Taylor outside and he really thrives there. Or you keep Marshawn Lattimore and Alante Taylor stays in the slot. It improves. If you know, Jordan Howden, Jonathan Abram kind of and Tyrann Mathieu kind of bridge that veteran to rookie to young player safety group, and they play effectively, if the kicking game, the punting game, if everything went perfectly, I think this team's ceiling is 12 wins. And again, that's if everything goes perfectly. No major injuries at positions you can't replace. you know, no double doinks in London, you know, stuff like that. Stuff that, you know, those games that could go either way go against you. No balls, no drops in the end zone for a game-tying touchdown. Stuff like that. Like, if all of that stuff goes your way, I think you're looking at a 12-win team. Now, somewhere in the middle of that is reality. And that's why, you know, the 7.5, we can talk about that for a second. The 7.5 over-under, a lot of it is sentiment. It's not necessarily analysis. And I think you're looking at a team that will be pushing to be in the same area it was last year. And that's what's frustrating, is I don't see a route to getting much better. That said, last year's team probably should have won 10 games. And if those breaks go your way this year, the way they didn't last year, say in Green Bay, say against the Jaguars, right? Then I think you're probably hoping to get back to 9 and 10 wins. If things go terribly, you flub on the draft. Trevor Penningkamp can't hack it at left tackle. Your right tackle is a rookie who, even if he's playing well, is still a rookie who's struggling. Derek Carr's getting rocked every time he drops back. Alvin Kamara shows his age. Kendre Miller gets hurt again. All this stuff goes against you. You're probably looking at a 4-win team. And, you know, I was joking with Steve about this. It's like, he was like, man, people will be so pissed if that happens. And I can't help but feel like, yes, people will be annoyed throughout the course of a 4-win season, but then there'll be a lot of people who'll be like, yeah, but that's the type of season that would get the coach fired. And if you were of the people that wants to see that happen, then you probably won't be mad. So I don't know. I do think that that's kind of the ring you kind of sit in of, okay, are you going to stay mired in this mediocrity where you show no signs of improvement, get another 9-win season, miss the playoffs on a tiebreaker, or are you just going to kind of bite the bullet and be bad? And I think this season, you could go either way, because there's this, you need depth and you need a shield from being that terrible team. And that's what's kind of gone away for the Saints over the last 2 years, is that shield that's kept you from that 5-4 or 5-win season, which you have not had since 2005. That's thinner and thinner and thinner by the day. And eventually you're going to break through that and it's just going to all fall off a cliff. I don't know if they're there right now, but they're getting close. And that's where I'll end it on that super positive note. Again, I'm Jeff Nowak. This is Inside Black and Gold. Thanks, everyone, for hanging out. I know it's kind of a weird time, but I did want to get a live stream at you, and I think we got it. We got it done. Thanks, everyone who hung around, everyone who dropped in a comment. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do that. Ring the bell on YouTube. You know, we've been kind of all over the map with episodes, so hopefully we can get on a little bit better of a rhythm as we get into the draft, which is going to throw everything out of whack again. But hey, that's the world we live in. Who dat? Go Saints. Peace, y'all. Peace.